So welcome to the Inspired Thinkers series by Arate House. My name is Toby Mendelsohn and I'm the one who has been inspired by the thinkers. In this brief introduction, I want to explain more or less why I have done this series and what I hope you may gain from it. So to answer the first question, I suppose these episodes have emerged out of quite a long period of reflection, which I think is probably the most important tool in any kind of philosophical toolkit. So reflection is certainly not sexy, and it runs very counter to all of the expectations of hyper-productivity in our age. But ultimately, good philosophy does require, in fact, it demands the time and the space to genuinely reflect. So after I finished my doctorate, which was a few years ago now, I took a nice long break from serious academic work. And I reflected. Now, the usual approach for newly minted PhDs is to become somewhat manic in publishing. That old mantra of publish or perish is about as true as it gets. So one publishes in the interests of securing a job in a very increasingly oversupplied academic job market. But I decided much earlier not to pursue a job in academia, and that allowed me the luxury of taking some time and space to really reflect on all the many threads which had emerged through my studies. And one of the strongest things to emerge was a strong sense of wanting to impart or communicate the most precious ideas that I had discovered to those people who would truly benefit from them, but who live too far from the abstract and esoteric world of philosophy to actually hear of them or encounter them. Philosophy is basically quite inaccessible to most people. And it's not because they lack the intelligence. It's simply because most people are very, very busy, and philosophy requires a lot of time and effort and patience to really yield its fruit. And philosophy is usually very technical and written in ways which are extraordinarily hard to understand. So it requires training and good guidance and a kind of willingness to step into confusion and the unknown. And it goes without saying that for most, it doesn't really directly help one's career and is more likely to create bills rather than pay for them. So there's a lot of very strong disincentives to engaging with philosophy, even if many people suspect that there are amazing jewels to be found within it. So in that space of reflection, I felt a kind of intractable gap between the sublime world of philosophy, which was giving me marvelous and necessary treasures, and which I had a kind of privileged access to, and then all the people who are confused or disoriented or fragmented by the tremendous chaos and confusion of these times. Intelligent people looking for insights, looking for meaning, truth, understanding, to make sense of the world and their place in it, but who are simply unsure where to turn to find these things. Now, there may, of course, be many good places to turn, but I believe that philosophy is actually the very best place. So crossing this gap has been a very central motivation in helping to establish Arate House, which, as I hope you know, is a publicly oriented educational institution. And this podcast series is a way of lining up all those fruits which survive that space of reflection, of looking into them and appreciating their qualities, of tasting them, and most especially of sharing them. And I realized that to share them properly, I would have to share myself too. Usually I'm much more comfortable taking myself out of the equation. And in academia, that's actually the right way to go about things. So the academic discusses ideas, theories, evidence, and makes arguments built out of those things. It might be the case that the ideal of pure detached scholarly objectivity is out of fashion, but there is still a very healthy semblance of taking the personality out of the equation. And I think that's a very good thing. But in this case, in attempting to speak to a more general audience, and especially in trying to convey philosophical insights to those outside of philosophy, I'm doing the opposite thing. I'm inserting myself into the equation. So in each episode, I go through a biographical narrative about my relationship with the thinker in question, which is really highly embarrassing. It's embarrassing not only because it seems somewhat narcissistic, but also because a lot of those narratives reveal certain conceits or dogmas in my approach, and they are embarrassing to confront. But nonetheless, I think something good is revealed in taking that approach, and this is really the power of great thinking to shape and transform a life. So one thing that I know immutably through my own experience is that I have been radically transformed for the better through a sincere, earnest, somewhat clumsy engagement with philosophy. Now, of course, there's nothing new in that kind of claim. That claim has really been there for as long as philosophy itself has, be it in the ancient Greek, Indian, or Chinese traditions. It's probably less prevalent in philosophy today, though, which is far more professional and specialised and technical. And I think, frankly, not at all concerned to live up to its etymological meaning. So philosophy comes from the ancient Greek to philo, to love, sophia, wisdom. And I think most professional philosophers don't pay much heed to that. In fact, they probably don't believe there is such a thing called wisdom. So I personally don't like to wander too far from that ancient meaning of philosophia. You know, I really believe in it. And in fact, there is an Indian Buddhist term in Sanskrit called prajna paramita, which I think is very roughly commensurate. That translates to the perfection of wisdom. And I think there's far more in that term than some kind of naive fairy tale. Now, in any case, I think there are certain dangers in seeing philosophy as some kind of therapy. So this series is not about psychologizing everything or reducing everything to the level of the self. I sincerely hope that it doesn't all become about me. What I'm trying to do is use my personal narrative as a kind of story that other people can enter, a doorway into the otherwise obscured home of these great thinkers. So it's principally a tactic to help us realize the transformative power of insights into the nature of reality, which actually come to life when one encounters and reflects and adopts them. So that's really the point. These aren't dead historical figures who left behind famous names. They are very much alive in the immanence of the understanding of those who understand them. And that understanding is manifest in all kinds of domains, most of which extend well beyond the locus of the individual self. Domains which extend from ethics to culture and society, to art, to relationships, to politics, to contemplative practices, to economics. So I hope, more than anything else, that this series inspires you to see this possibility, and ultimately, in your own way, to take that possibility with open arms. And it should go without saying that your inspired thinkers might well be very different from mine. And I should also concede from the outset that I make no claims to have overcome those clouds of dogma and conceit, which are so much a part of the narrative. But I do claim to have found some particular ideas which are not mere bubbles of inspiration. They are lifelong companions, and truly the most treasured things I have found in life. So it's in this sense that I think it would be really quite selfish not to make some attempt to share them. And in doing this series, I learned a few things about what survived that space of reflection and what did not. So the nine thinkers or traditions which comprise the series are those which I count as real influences. Influences which do their influencing almost invisibly or unconsciously. But all the time they're there, in the very way I see the world, in my very eyes which look, perceive and interpret. And of course they're probably there more overtly and tangibly too, in the way I think and the conversations I have and the arguments I make. And there are certain patterns or themes which emerge through the series which may appear quite intentional and purposive from the outside, but actually they were very unintended. So in particular, there's a curious dialectic between romanticism and rationality, which seems to come up every episode. And often a kind of tension between discourse and theory and silence. And for whatever reason, a weird relationship between ancient India and modern Germany. It's better not to ask the question of how all these different thinkers fit together into one cohesive or unified set of beliefs. It's definitely not what I'm offering, and I'm not sure I was ever really in the business of trying to achieve that. Which is probably quite lucky, because it's surely impossible to reconcile Kant with Marx, with Aristotle, with Nagarjuna. So the safest conclusion is, if we're being kind, to call me a kind of open-ended pluralist, or if we're being unkind, a curious mess of inconsistency, or very, very unkind, a walking, talking contradiction. I'll leave you to judge that by the end of the series. But I do sincerely hope that you extract some beautiful insights from the series, and that sets you on your own particular inspired way. One final note, which is indeed a small plug. At Arate House, we do run courses on philosophy. So some of the podcasts do link up with course material. So if you're interested in pursuing any of these topics with greater depth, I do encourage you to sign up for some of our courses. So stay tuned to our website for those details.